I think that as we approach Hanukkah, it would be helpful, appropriate, maybe even inspiring a little bit to focus a little bit on the very special and unique aspect that we find in this in the Nisim that took place. Not speaking about the Nes HaMenorah, that's one specific thing, but speaking about the survival of Torah in Klal Yisrael. The Ramban says that if not for the victory of the Hashmonoim, Torah and Mitzvahs would have been forgotten to Klal Yisrael. Of course, we know that's not really the case, because the Torah promised L'Shishochach Mipizaroi, but it sounds like the situation was very precarious. The Torah was on the brink of extinction. Of course, it couldn't have happened because of the Haftocha. Kodesh Baruch Hu wouldn't let it happen. But the Hashmonoim were the ones that were instrumental in assuring or in participating in history that they make sure that this does not happen. And they're credited with having prevented this tragedy, although in reality we know that tragedy can never and will never take place. So I thought be a little bit interesting just to review some of these ideas. And I remember from a personal experience as a teenager, I must have been about 15 years old at the time, and all of a sudden, you know, one day, like, it hits you. Like, how do I know? What's going on over here? Like, what's this all really about? And I had a temporary answer which held me over for a bit, and then a more complete answer which was really logically and emotionally quite satisfying. The temporary answer was I had just finished reading a biography of the Vilna Goin, and I saw, like, it was a short biography, and I saw a genius like beyond what we could even imagine. So I thought to myself, I said, if this genius and so many other geniuses like him, because we were known to have the greatest minds in all of history, and any thought that I might have, I'm sure he was certainly capable of thinking, and you know, he must have had answers for it. He was the Vilna Goin. He remained the Vilna Goin till his very last moment. And I assume that, you know, that should be enough for now. But intellectually, that wasn't very emotionally. That was somewhat satisfying, you know. All right, if I'm in the same quandary as the Vilna Goin and he came through, I'll ride through on his coattails. But intellectually, it didn't do very much for me. But then I just happened to have read another book, I remember very clearly, and that book was entitled The Spirit of Jewish History by Rabbi Joseph Elias. And it was a little book, a short book, but it just went through the major events in Jewish history. And when I thought about that book in retrospect, I thought to myself, I says, I don't get it. How could it be? It's the most miraculous of miraculous tales that are possibly imaginable. You know, a nation so small in numbers, so long displaced from any place to call its home, to call its own, to hang its hat, and yet its survival to this day so miraculous under the worst conditions, and not only the survival as a people, but the survival as the people of the book, with the same book, intact as it was for thousands of years, still putting on the same tefillin and putting on this and putting up the same mezuzah and putting on the same tzitzis and sitting in the same sukkah and taking the same lulav and esrog and avaiter, avaiter, avaiter. I says, that to me, that's clearly, blatantly the hand of Hashem assuring, guiding and assuring the survival of the Klal Yisrael and the survival of the Torah as the essence, as the pillar, as the thing that, you know, keeps Klal Yisrael going. I didn't know at the time that Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the Hakdamah to his Siddur swore by his life that the miracles that have surrounded the survival of Klal Yisrael and the survival of the Torah to Klal Yisrael are greater than all the miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. But I had that sense that there's no explanation. There is no rational, logical, historic, sociological, any kind of logical you might imagine, explanation of the existence of the Klal Yisrael and the Torah with the Klal Yisrael to this very day under the worst conditions, other than the Yad Hashem. There's a very famous, I'm sure everybody here knows it, but I just enjoy reading it, and I think that we spoke about the perspective of the Chachmei Yisrael and maybe the our own emotional reactions. But there was a well known, unfortunately, it was an article basically anti-Semitic. It was in the midst of a broader article which was had many anti-Semitic innuendos. But in the middle of the whole thing, the author just chaps his bilus. And he writes as follows, and I'm sure you've all heard this before. If statistics are right, and I've read this probably hundreds of times, but I get inspired every time. If the statistics are right, the Jews constitute but 1% of the human race, which is not true, it's probably 0.02% of the human race, but whatever. It suggests a nebulous puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. No. Okay. Properly, the Jew ought hardly to be heard of, but he is heard of. Has always been heard of. He is as prominent on the planet as any other people, and his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk. His contributions to the world's list of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, medicine, and abstruse learning are also way out of proportion to the weakness of his numbers. He has made a marvelous fight in the world in all the ages and has done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be vain of himself and be excused for it. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose filled the planet with sound and splendor and then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out, and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? That was Mark Twain in, I think, 1898, something like that. So it's quite obvious, and there's others. There's who knows how many quotes you could find by the Umos HaOlam, just looking and there being nishtoimim of the existence, the survival, and of the Klal Yisrael, and the survival of the Klal Yisrael with its Torah, with its commandments, with its mitzvahs. This is truly something that's beyond anybody's ability to explain rationally without the realization that there is a divine hand which orchestrates this reality. But when you think about it, the truth of the matter is that it doesn't make any sense for so many specific reasons as well. Let's talk about the Klal Yisrael existing. You know, large populations have a chance of survival. They're big. They take up a lot of space. They command a lot of influence and respect. So they self-perpetuate and they multiply and they grow and they grow and they keep growing, and you know, they have a chance of survival. The Jewish people, it's well known that our numbers have always ranged between 12 and 20 million, something like that. That's been the number, seems. They have charts throughout history. You know, never very, very significant in the scope of the total things. The only survival of any type of a nationhood that we've seen is those that would be geographically isolated. They're locked up behind the wall in China, the Great Wall, or in, I don't know, in India maybe they were something they had. But for the last close to 2,000 years, we had no geography. Jewish geography meant wherever you go on the face of this planet, you're going to meet somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows you. That was Jewish geography. We're all over the world. No matter where you go, go to Iceland and you'll find some Jews over there too. Wherever you go, we were far-flung corners of the earth. And other nations that survived maybe survived as rulers. We weren't rulers. We were subjugated to cultures, both in our Golus and even before the exile, subjugated to the occupying or attempting to occupy forces that came into Eretz Yisrael. So we had relatively little time in the broader scope of our history where we were really in charge. And yet, here we are. Doesn't make any sense. Secondly, there were certain movements, dissident, disparate, inappropriate movements in Klal Yisrael that attempted to rise up from time to time, and yet they all disappeared. It isn't something that the Jew has some kind of survival gene that he says, oh, you know, whatever I do will survive. Because when they deviated, they had Avodah Zorah starting the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. We know in Hanukkah, the Yevonim and all of their, the Greek lifestyles and this. Then there was the Tzedukim towards the end of the second Beis HaMikdash, and they denied Torah Shebaal Peh. And yet all of these groups disappeared. They don't have any basis today. You know, it's like the only thing that survived was that mainstream Klal Yisrael. Same thing with the modern movements. The conservative movement is in big trouble today, big trouble, because you know people are either disappearing to the right and becoming Baalei Tshuva, or disappearing to the left, and the movements on the left have accepted Goyim as part of their movement, so that, you know, they don't survive as Klal Yisrael, they don't survive as Jews. And yet here we are, thousands of years, close to 2,000 under the worst conditions of oppression and devastation and hatred and both to our bodies and our souls. That's what we celebrate. On Hanukkah, we celebrate the survival of the Torah, the spiritual survival of Klal Yisrael. And on Purim, we celebrate the physical, material survival of Klal Yisrael. And yet, on both fronts, you know, we're here today to tell this story, and everybody else has disappeared. I think that something else that's also very significant, and maybe even the most significant aspect of all, this alone would be cause for anyone to think there has to be the Ad Hashem. There is no other rational explanation other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrating the survival of Klal Yisrael and the survival of the Torah with its mitzvahs, with its text to Klal Yisrael. But when you take it a little bit further, it gets even a little bit more amazing. Number one, the survival of the text. The text. I've read that on the Christian Bible, that's the New Testament, what they call it, that they have found 400,000 textual variations in the Bible. This is a volume that's shorter than our Tanakh for sure, that's newer, that was guaranteed, that was studied and written over by the establishment that the Christian world has such power over the last 2,000 years, financial and political and influential, and monasteries and people studying and writing and whatever they were doing, and yet 400,000 textual variations. They say 50 of them that completely change the meaning of the text, and like, you know, that's what normally happens. over time. That's what happens. Even though the book was printed so many times, and even though it was published and republished, mistakes ruin. And here you take our Sefer Torah, and you compare it to other Sifrei Torah, and there's chaseiros and yoseiros, sometimes the vav and the yud, which doesn't change the meaning. And then there's what? And there's one. And there's one place where there's actually an aleph instead of a hey. You know, some have an aleph, some have a. But it doesn't make any sense. It's mind-boggling. So it stayed the same. And I would say, I don't say this is not scientific, but there must be some connection between the fact of the authenticity and the integrity and the power of the Torah to survive in its original form for thousands of years, and the Klal Yisrael to survive together with the mitzvahs that are in the Torah. Of course, part of the formula is really a very ingenious formula, because a text is in danger of getting changed. A text, because a text, or somebody makes a mistake and then somebody copies the mistake. The system that we have is very interesting, because it's a text that directs action, and then there's a lifestyle that reflects the text. So not only is the text read publicly three times a week, once a week, finished every year, I don't know for how many years that was, it wasn't for the whole time of the Golos, but not only is the text studied by everybody, each individual taking a copy of this text and studying it and teaching it to his children, to his grandchildren, that's part of the obligation of the text. But my whole lifestyle, the Torah talks about tefillin, I put on tefillin. The Torah talks about tzitzis, I put on tzitzis. The Torah talks about matzah, I eat matzah. In the right time, sukkah, I eat sukkah. Mezuzah, I put mezuzah. Talmud Torah, I do Talmud Torah. Trumas, Maestras, Shabbos, Yontif, this, that. The Torah Shebichsav, and even the Torah Shebal Peh, we live by that. The lifestyle and the similarity of the lifestyle, despite different minhagim, which do exist, but the basic halachic concepts which exist, and the mitzvahs, the tariag mitzvahs, and it's like, in one hand it's mind-boggling, on the other hand it's sociologically satisfying, because, hey, I get it. I understand why we survive. I understand why everything survived, because this is a system that's constantly passed on, read publicly, not allowed to make any changes. If a Balkaira Nebuch reads a word wrong, they jump on him. If there's a slit between a letter in the Sefer Torah, where there's a clear break between, it has to be put away and it has to be fixed within 30 days, because it's a Dovah Sheina Mesukin, you're not allowed to leave it. I mean, that system, and then the lifestyle that we live by all of these mitzvahs, when you take it all together, Taka, we understand that this is an ingenious system that has survived. So that's one aspect of it. But I think there's another aspect which is also, and adds to it, a dimension which takes it just, you know, a major step further. And that is that all of this was predicted in the text. All of it was predicted in the text. In fact, in this forthcoming event that we're planning, this seminar, we put down one of the titles of one of the talks there, History Before It Happens. That's what it is. We have a Sefer Torah. It's a historical record of all the events that happened in Jewish history, but it was all written before the events took place. And we don't have the time now to go into it, but if you read Parshas Kisovo, you read Parshas Bechukosa, you read so much of the Nevi'im, the events of the future being predicted and prophesied, you know, and the prophecies, in order to be prophecies, they have to be illogical. Because logical predictions, the weatherman makes not logical predictions, he has machinery, but some political scientist can make logical projections based on what we know. The nevuas of the Torah are the most, the Klal Yisrael will survive. That's the most illogical of all illogical things, because of the matzav that's predicted in the Torah itself about how we're going to be oppressed and how we're going to be sent goyla achar goyla, and we won't find a place to rest our feet for a moment, and the minute we succeed, we're going to be chased out, and we've been chased out of the finest places in the world, and not so finest places in the world, and the persecution that's going to happen, and the attempts to destroy our Torah, and the attempt to destroy the Klal Yisrael, and all of this predicted and told to us it's going to happen. And it unfolds, and yet the two haftochos, which remain in place and which are functional and realistic to this very day. Number one is, I will never break my bris, Hashem says with you, and no matter where you are in the lands of your enemies, I will never allow you to be destroyed. A promise. The Klal Yisrael will never be destroyed. And not only will the Klal Yisrael never be destroyed, but the Torah promises that the Torah will be loisi shochach mi pizaroi. Ruchi asher alecho udvor asher samti beficho lo yemushu mi picho mi pizarocho mi pizaro zaracho mi atav adoilam. So when you take such a miraculous history, which in and of itself you see the Yad Hashem, and when you combine it with the fact that in the Torah all of this was told to us thousands of years before. By the way, even the secular sources admit that the Tanakh was written down about 2,400 years ago, a little bit more than 2,400 years ago, because that's when it was first translated into Greek. So that's clearly before the Churban Bayis Sheni, as predicted. So it's a little bit before the Churban Bayis Rishon, certainly before the 2,000 years of Golus, and the Torah predicts all the events of the Golus. So we take this all together. It's a very, very powerful statement. And therefore, I think that as we prepare and as we begin and as we start, as we actually celebrate this Hanukkah, which the Iker Nisim that took place were the Nisim of the survival of Torah to Klal Yisrael. And by the way, that's what we say the Hallel on, and that's what we say the Alanisim on. We do not say Hallel Alanisim on the Nes of the Menorah, because the Nes of the Menorah didn't happen to us. It's Shira LaShem Ki Gomel Olai. The Nes of the Menorah happened to Klal Yisrael then. On the other hand, the Aleiz Nes Kavua, the Ika Nes of Chanukah is the Menorah. So the Rambam's Loshen is, because through the appreciation of the Nes of the Menorah, through that appreciation, we come to appreciate all the survival of Torah and Mitzvahs to Klal Yisrael. And I think it's really very poshut, because you can't appreciate the survival of Torah and Mitzvahs unless you appreciate one Mitzvah. But when you appreciate the fact that all we're doing is celebrating the fact that 2,500 years ago there was a generation where in fact they couldn't find the proper oil to light the menorah for 8 days until they made new oil that was Torah. And what happened? A miracle happened, and they weren't potter with an oinus. And they didn't have to use tomei oil, which they could have used b'dieved. So this generation celebrate was able to fulfill a mitzvah kitikuna kihidura lechatchila in the most preferable form 2,500 years ago, and we're still celebrating that. And when we look at that menorah and we realize the chashivus of one mitzvah, that it's kedai for a whole nation in its history, 2,500 years later, that's 2,500 approximately years later, to celebrate the fact that that generation was able, in fact, to perform a mitzvah in its most favorable form, rather than to be excused, rather than to do it b'dieved with the tomei dika oil. If a person can look at that light of the menorah and appreciate what one mitzvah means, now we can appreciate the survival of Torah to Klal Yisrael. So therefore, I would suggest that if we really want to develop this emotional sense of what it really means the Torah survived, what it really means the mitzvah survived, rather than doing it en masse as somebody once said, as a statistic, you know, too big. The Torah, the mitzvahs, Taryag's a big number too. It's not millions, but it's big, you know, and it's massive. And the Sifrei Kodesh that discuss all the Taryag mitzvahs are endless. Teresh Baal Peh is endless. There's so much. Rather than look at that, if we start to focus on the chashivus of one mitzvah, whatever that means, see what it means, what a privilege it means. You know what that means? Shows us from all the nations. That alone. Oh, how you loved us. You desired us. That's even beyond love. Love, but a cheshek. A Kodesh Baruch Hu Kav Yoch has cheshek for Klal Yisrael. What it means, if we can focus and appreciate one, the chashivus, the privilege of one mitzvah, we can from that extrapolate and appreciate what it means that Torah mitzvah survived. So I guess the suggestion would be that as we stand and look at the Ner HaMenorah, if we could just try to think about this. Look what we're doing. Look what Klal Yisrael is mudding this strange nation of Klal Yisrael. Mika Amcha Yisrael, Taka Einachinami, Mika Amcha Yisrael, that they're still celebrating the fact that one generation was able to perform a mitzvah. Wow, I guess mitzvahs are really very choshev. And if I don't feel it, I better start focusing on it and paying attention to it, because obviously, throughout the generations, Klal Yisrael appreciated this, and hopefully I'll be able to inspire myself to a greater appreciation as well.